Tomorrow night, I'll be back with you on Coast to Coast AM. We'll be discussing miracles. Have you ever had a miracle in your life? I want you to be a part of the show tomorrow night with us. Also, what is our purpose? We'll examine that concept. How can we tap into our purpose? How can we figure out what our place is here on Earth and what are we here to do? That's the other topic we'll be covering tomorrow night on Coast to Coast AM. I hope that you'll join me from 12 a.m. till 4 a.m. Central Time. If you'd like to find stations in your area that are playing Coast to Coast AM, check out coasttocoastam.com. While you're there, check out all the great information, the photographs, news stories, and you can become an insider. It's very simple, very easy. 15 cents a day will give you access to over 5 years of our past archives. You'll be able to get involved in live chats with George Norrie and some of the amazing guests that we have here on Coast to Coast AM. You'll find out more about the guest hosts like myself, and you can find links to us. If you like the strange and the supernatural, you can join me Monday through Friday, 9 p.m. till midnight Central, as I host Darkness Radio. And you can find that information at darknessradio.com. As a matter of fact, we have a live chat going on in there right now on our front page. It's free. It's easy to access. So if you'd like to be a part of the show, you can also join into the chat room with other like-minded individuals. What Wags the World? Tales of Conscious Awakening. Miriam Knight is our guest. We're going to take your phone calls, your stories of conscious awakening, your questions for our guest, and hear more about some of the incredible stories she's collected in this book. We'll do that on Coast to Coast next. Miriam Knight is our guest. The book that we're discussing is What Wags the World? Tales of Conscious Awakening. Miriam, I know during the first hour we were talking a lot about the stories that were involved in this book, kind of the idea of what is conscious awakening? How can people start to open up to that? And I hope people don't feel that I was being too negative in some of my questioning or in the self-doubt that we have, but I know that there's a large portion of the audience, skeptics, if you will, cynics, that stand on the fence post of having a hard time understanding some of this concept. So I try to be the voice of that as well. I firmly believe there is an amazing consciousness that is out there for us to tap into. I've been there. I've had channeling sessions, if you will, as I've written or I've talked to my children and talked to friends in down times where we get this amazing download of information that didn't seem to be a part of who we are, but it becomes part of us once it's shared. I mean, do you find that that is part of the conscious awakening? It's becoming a conduit for the information that's around us at all the time and learning from that?
Well, there's no substitute, Dave, for direct experience. But one of the things that I tried to do in the book was to find a group of people of such impeccable credentials as being straight, mainstream, feet on the ground, doctors, lawyers, engineers, CEOs of multinational corporations, all of whom have come out and described their awakening experiences. And you know what? The paranormal is becoming the new normal, in my view. So many people are having these experiences.
And do you find that most people that are in high positions are in those positions not out of mere luck or knowing somebody, but because they do have that intuition that they've allowed to flourish?
I've actually read studies about CEOs of successful corporations admit that they use their intuition most of the time, because you sometimes have to bypass the rational mind and go with your gut. That is what your guidance system is for. You know that we have a brain in our gut. Might as well use it.
Well, let's take a break. We're going to start taking phone calls from the listeners. If they have questions or their own views of conscious awakening, we want to hear them. Oh, we've taken the break. I'm sorry. My mind is already melting down for the evening. We've got Miriam Knight with us. Let's go to the phone lines and wildcard line one, Mike from Kalama, Washington. Welcome to the show.
Hi. I have an experience for your guest that my wife relayed to me. Well, my wife's grandmother died about 30 years ago, and she was over 100 years old. And she came from Czechoslovakia to Canada when she first came over here. She came alone in her early teens. And my wife lived in California, and her grandmother lived in Colorado. So my wife only saw her about six or seven times during her whole life. Like I said, she passed away about 30 years ago. And about a month ago, my wife came to me and says, you're not going to believe what happened to me. I said, what happened? She says, my grandmother, about 3 days ago, came to me in a dream and told me that when she first went to Canada, she had to stay in Canada, and then she went to Ellis Island to get into the United States. And she told my wife, when I went to Canada, I went at a town. It was a French name. I can't pronounce it. My wife can't pronounce it. She doesn't speak French. But she said her grandmother actually spelled the name to her over and over and over, about three or four times, until she had the correct spelling of the name. So my wife didn't think much of it. And we have a lot of books, a lot of atlases. So a couple of days after that happened, my wife went to the Worldwide Atlas, and she looked for that name, and she found the name. It was a little village in eastern Canada. And she was just dumbfounded. I mean, it's just unbelievable. And my wife isn't the type to make up stories or anything. I mean, she's, you know, we're both in our 70s, and she was just so shocked that this happened.
Thank you very much for sharing your story with us, Mike. Stories like that they're inspiring, isn't it? When you know that you're getting information, you're getting it from somewhere. And when you do open up to those experiences, Miriam, it seems to be, as many people say, once you turn that light on, once you open that door, it becomes easier to get that information.
Not only that, you share it with other people, Dave, and that's the way the expansion of consciousness happens.
What was one of your favorite stories that you put into the book?
Oh, gosh, there are so many. You know, one of my favorites was Jake Ducey, because he was a young college jock. He was a beach bum. He was about as far from awakening as it's possible to get, you know, partying all the time. And at one stage, he just, the light went out of his life. He realized that it was just not getting him anywhere. And he lay on his bed in his dorm room, and he said, I'm not getting off of my bed until I get some clarity. And he got this message that he needed to trust the universe would provide him with whatever he needed. He went off traveling around the world with no money. He ended up in Latin America, in the Far East, in a monastery, and he had one incredible experience after another. So he is the voice that can speak to the younger generation. I think it's really important that the millennials understand their power to change the world, because that's going to be on their shoulders.
Wildcard line 4, Kelly in Moab, Utah. Welcome to the show.
Hey, Dave. Hey, Miriam.
Hi.
Can you guys
what
hear
did you
me
want
well
to share?
Enough?
I'm sorry?
Can you hear me well enough?
Yep, you're coming through great. What did you want to share with us?
Well, first I would like to, I was just going to mention, I'm a survivor of a near-death experience. I've had several crazy things happen to me in my life. I'm 30 years old, and I've been searching. Something has been pulling at me for years, since I was 15 years old. I can't even describe it. And actually, last night, it all kind of came to me after I meditated I was meditating, and everything kind of came to me, and I just started writing stuff down. And I can read it to you. It'll take me about a minute and a half to read it if you would like me to share, if I could read it to you guys.
Sure. You're on the air. Let's hear what you have to share.
Okay. This is what came to me after this meditation. It says, I wrote, I am connected to the universal mind. I am created in the image and the likeness of the source creator that is love. I have been given a clean slate. The only expectation I have is that the universe will provide all I need to accomplish my goals. I will not try to control every aspect of every situation. I truly long to be home with the source creator, connected with my higher self, in tune with the divine consciousness. I truly desire the freedom to express myself and be happy in this dimension. I express myself through creativity, innovation, progress, and construction from my mind's eye. I am happy helping, inspiring, sharing, bringing laughter and joy to others, spreading love with whoever I contact. I am not afraid to ask the universe to fulfill my desires. I believe that any denomination or congregation that segregates from itself and all other people who don't believe in its faith is being deceived. I believe that there are I believe that we are all connected physically, emotionally, energetically through the universal mind. My thoughts and emotions are in alignment with my actions. I take full responsibility for the actions and decisions throughout my life, whether the outcome be positive or negative. I understand that everything that has ever happened in my life is a result of my thoughts and decisions. I have total faith in the universe that it is working in my favor as a result of my thoughts. I am whole, perfect, strong, powerful, loving, harmonious, happy, prosperous, successful, healthy, and I am love.
How powerful. Yeah, I mean, that's beautiful. It's a powerful statement to make. And Miriam, so many of the speakers, you know, you hear the Tony Robbins, the Og Mandino, Zig Ziglars, they don't talk about what they want. They talk about things as though they're there and a part of that reality. And they've even, you know, the old saying used to be fake it till you make it. And that even has a negative connotation to it. They've seemed to have done away with that. And it's more of just living in that now as though it currently exists. And some people refer to that as manifestation. And thank you so much for calling in, Kelly. Do you think that that's an important part of creating that new paradigm for yourself? It's not, I want the universe to give to me. I need from the universe, but talking as though you're already there.
Well, it's going back to the universe listening to what you're saying. Because if you're saying that I need something, you are anchoring the distance between you and what it is you need. So you're anchoring the state of not having it. That's why they say in all of the manifestation courses to visualize it as if it has already happened. It is part of your energy field. It is part of your life. And I just wanted to say another word about what Kelly said, which is the use of automatic writing. This is such a wonderful tool, and I warmly encourage people to try and to develop it for themselves. It's something that I do. I've been doing it really for 15, 20 years.
How do we go about opening that to have that happen? Is it just simply sitting down with a piece of paper and a pen and allowing consciousness to flow from our fingers instead of thinking and trying to plot out what we want to say or how we're feeling?
Absolutely. It's using the kinesthetic sense. In fact, after my husband got his psychic opening, I used to be the tea lady at this gathering of psychics that we hosted. And one of them said, you know, you're psychic too, and you're going to be opening in the next 2 weeks, and you'll be doing automatic writing. And I had just been reading Ruth Montgomery's book about how she started. Ruth Montgomery was a world-class journalist for the Washington Post in the 50s. And so I just sat every evening at the same time with a piece of paper and a pen and, you know, meditated and quieted my mind and waited for something to happen. And eventually, you know, squiggles on the page, then letters, then words, then interactive dialogue.
So you don't believe that it's just opening up to our own id or super id or super ego, but we're actually getting this information from another source.
You know, what you're talking about is the notion of separation. If you think that we are all one, that what we are tapping into is the universal mind, or perhaps the particularization of the universal mind that's connected to us, because we are simply individuations of the universal consciousness experiencing this lifetime to bring back the gift of knowledge and experience to source.
Our caller, Kelly, talked about having a near-death experience. In the book, do any of your speakers, any of the people that have had these experiences, do they talk about their ideas between death and the afterlife?
You know, there was one fascinating guy, Dave Bennett, and one of the things that he said really struck me, because he said he had the life review, which we hear about in most of the near-death experience tales. But he said that what he was able to see was his life not only from his perspective as he lived it, but from the perspective of everybody with whom he interacted. So if he wronged somebody or if he hurt someone, he was actually able to feel the pain, the discomfort, the embarrassment of the other individual as if he were experiencing it himself. And he further said that he was surrounded by his soul group, but they only had unconditional love for him. The only person who was critical of his own past life was he himself.
So in a sense, we create our own hell.
In every sense, we create our own hell. We create our own heaven as well.
Let's talk a little bit about that, and then we'll take some more calls here as we go into the bottom of the hour. But all of the different people that contributed to this book, does each person come from a Christianity standpoint, or are there many different variations of theology and belief systems involved in their own lives?
Many, many different belief systems. One gal, Jessica Maxwell, she was about as atheistic as you could get. You know, she was a travel writer. She had no truck with any of that spirituality stuff. She was burnt as a child and really turned off. And when her father died, she was driving back home and saw her father's face in the sky. Not only that, she spoke to her sister, and her sister saw the same face 1,000 miles away. This really got her attention. And so she started reading everything she could about these kind of phenomena, and ended up talking with Deepak Chopra and just with spiritual leaders around the world. She has become a healer, and she leads spiritual journeys to Bhutan. It's quite a turnaround, a 180-degree turnaround.
Now, as somebody with a background in psychology like you have, does psychology telling you anything about experiences like that? I mean, I would stand to think that knowing that your father has passed away and then seeing them or seeing a visage of them, you don't believe that that could just be something, just the mind working through the grief process?
It could be, but when her sister independently said that she saw the same thing, it's unlikely.
And that is where it gets interesting, isn't it? Because if there is this connective web between all of us, who begat what, right? Did the sister have this memory or this thought or this image appear to her, and that translated down the line through the, telegraphic connectivity between her and her sister, which created her sister to see the same thing? Was it that kind of connection that allowed this moment to happen? Was it something independently that happened to both of them to bring them closer? That's where it's so intriguing to me to see how these stories play out.
My guess is that the sister simply acted as corroboration for Jessica so that she was able to actually deepen into her path of exploration.
Do the subjects in your book, do they have a theory on what is God?
Yes. In one word, love.
Just love. It's a basic sense instead of a...
It's the basic glue of the universe. It's what manifests, what holds, what in encompasses and connects.
Tomorrow night we'll be talking about miracles and finding our purpose in life. I want to talk when we come back with you about purpose in life. Are there some insights in the book that these leaders, these experiencers have given to you that can shed some light and make it easier for us maybe on our journey? So we'll talk with our guest Miriam Knight about that. We'll also continue taking your phone calls. Phone lines are open. We'll put those numbers out for you again here at the break time. But we want to hear from you. What were your experiences? What are your thoughts, concerns, or questions regarding a conscious awakening? Are you ready to have that? Are you set in your life? Or have you been your own worst enemy? Let's talk about that and more. You're listening to the best in overnight talk radio. This is Coast to Coast AM. And from Waterville, New York, east of the Rockies, Michael, you're on the air. What did you want to talk about?
It's good to hear you, George. And I've been listening to Miriam. And I agree with Kelly and Miriam. I've experienced NDEs. But now, shoes on the other foot, I've been given by the doctors information that my kidneys and liver are down to 10%, and my life expectancy is zero. On the other hand,
predictions and such paint the beautiful picture of a life that I should be moving into. And I'm thinking to myself, is it going to happen or not? What's the story?
Well, you know, Neil Donald Walsh, who wrote the Conversation with God book, said to me once, the most exciting thing that you'll ever do in your life is dying. It is the message of all of the NDEs that we've read about, that life persists beyond this physical experience. And most of the people who transition to the other side really, really don't want to come back. They're almost forced back, kicking and screaming, because the task of conveying the continuity of life is what they have to fulfill. So, you know, just live your days with the most joy you can muster, and don't worry about the other side. It's going to be wonderful.
Thank you for calling, Mike. Our prayers and thoughts are out with you as well. Do we have a purpose? Miriam, and do you cover that in the book? Is there a purpose in life that we have defined, or is that already laid out for us?
It's not laid out for us. It's laid out by us. I think the consensus of all of these stories is that we come in after a planning session with our team in order to experience different aspects of living, of the human experience. One of the metaphors that I've been thinking about is a rock tumbler. You know how you put in these kind of dull-looking rocks, and after they've been tumbling around and being abraded by all the other rocks there, they become luminous, and you can see the color and the light through them. That's what living on this planet is like. It's polishing off all the rough edges so that your essential light can come through. And if you need more polishing, you keep on coming back.
Romancing the stone, right? Taking the pieces off that don't benefit you, and letting the inner light and the beauty of that stone shine through. We'll continue taking your calls. We've got so much more to discuss right here on Coast to Coast AM. Tonight, Tales of Conscious Awakening. Our guest is Miriam Knight. The book is out and available. We have links to this book and to Miriam on our website at coasttocoastam.com. Go check out coasttocoastam.com and become an insider so you never miss another minute of the best in overnight talk radio. There's great information on the site, 5 years worth of past archives, and so much more information for literally 15 cents a day. Go check out coasttocoastam.com. Let's go back to the phone lines. West of the Rockies, Kathy in Isleta, New Mexico. Welcome to the show.
Hi, guys. It's really great to be online tonight. I'm looking out the window, and there's a line of Luminatias. It's pitch black, but the Luminatias are lighting the path. Okay, my little story happened like 10 years ago, and I was waiting for my... It was Valentine's Day. So I'm sitting here half the day thinking, oh, great, the boyfriend's going to call me and wish me happy Valentine's Day any minute now, any minute, Kathy. Okay, hours go by. So by 12:30, no call. So I'm just sitting here with my busted little ego, right? Okay, no call. So the phone rings, all right, and it's a friend from Las Lunas. So she says, I have a favor to ask you. Is there any way you can come pick up 4 monks and drive them to the west side to Rio Rancho? There's a healing going on for an elderly man, and there's already 4 monks there, but these guys need to get up there. And then after that, if you can take them, you know, to another place where they're doing some other teachings. So I said, sure, I'll do that. So I picked them up. We went up to Rio Rancho. And as we get there, the healing is already almost over. So we're just kind of sitting back, listening to the chanting, and it ended. And when it was over, there was a young couple, and they were having this blessing and this healing for their grandfather, who was like probably about 94 years old or something like this. And he happened to be a Spanish man. Well, they said, you guys are all going to stay and we're going to give you a feast, because they were, you know, thanking the monks and having them come to eat at, you know, after the blessing. So I just, you know, happened to be there too, and they invited me also. So I was very, you know, gracious and thankful, and I sat down with them. And as I sat there, it was so unreal, surreal, just what it's supposed to be, Valentine's Day. You know, you're sitting there amongst, like, maybe, what, 8 robed saffron, beautiful, almost like a beautiful heart, you know, right there, Valentine's Day, love. And the man that was getting blessed, he's 94 years old, and he's telling me things that happened in his little pueblo way back in the day, how people he knew way back then, probably some of my grandfathers and their friends. I mean, if that's not what Valentine's Day is and what the world should be, love, God is love, Buddha is love, the Great Spirit is love, the corn mothers and the grandfathers, we're all love, and that's why we're here. And I really like your analogy about the stone polishing. Thank you, Miriam. And everybody, just keep meditating in their own way. Thank you.
Thank you. We appreciate you calling in, Kathy. Yeah, that, another beautiful sentiment on that, Miriam. Did you want to build on that at all?
Well, I just want to say that I had asked each of the people in the book the same 3 questions. Was there a particular event that was a turning point in your life? What was the insight that you got as a result, and how did that affect what you do now? And then, what is your message to the reader? And they all had very profound messages, very different, but very profound. And, you know, the callers are adding a wonderful dimension to what I've been experiencing through my interviews. So, you know, someone like Peter Russell, who is a physicist, and he said that what I want to say can be summarized in 2 words, just to be kind to each other. It's one of the universal teachings. And then another one, Irene Kendig said, there's no wrong way to do life. I mean, how empowering is that?
I agree. And again, beautiful sentiments, a great message. But I couldn't agree more with you about just doing right, being kind, being a part of the moment, and sometimes even just taking the time to make somebody else's day by smiling or chatting with them. I fell in love with a movie last year, Miriam, that, you know, a science fiction-based movie, but it was a beautifully written, very clever movie called About Time. And it's a time travel movie. That really had a heart to it. It really kind of gave you this perspective of how to live your life and living a day twice, the first time to go through it, the second time to go through it a little bit more detailed and enjoy the moments. And how do we actually teach ourselves to do that the first time around? And sharing that smile, sharing the comfort and love that we have for one another and watching it blossom. Because they say laughter spreads, right? You start laughing and it'll spread with other people. You share a smile and people are inclined to smile back at you. And that is something that's catchy and that changes the parameters. And it's sometimes the littlest effort can make a big change and start to awaken other people or give people a sense of hope.
You know, another aspect of that is looking at the same situation from another perspective. That is so important because we get really stuck in our own view of the world. And if you look at what's happening in the political scene, everyone is so entrenched in how they view the world and refuse to look at it from the other side. So we will never get to peace or understanding if we keep those blinders on. It was Rumi who said, out beyond all notions of right and wrong, there's a field, I will meet you there. So broaden your perspective. I love that that movie shows different perspectives by repeating it each time.
Wildcard Line 2, Andy from Los Angeles. You're on the air with us. What did you want to share?
Yes, great show, Dave. Back around 1972-73, I had just been out of the Army a couple of years, and I was staying at my grandmother's home, taking her to church once a week, volunteering. And to make a long story short, my uncle, who was getting ready to inherit everything from my grandmother, she was quite wealthy, he suddenly passed away from pneumonia. And I had a deep bond with him, along with my brother. He was like a real father to both of us, closer than my own dad. So one day, it was a Saturday night, just before Sunday morning. I'm laying in his bed in another room. My grandmother is in an adjoining room. And this was approximately 2 months, 3 months after he passed away. And I said, in the middle of the night, I said, "You know, Uncle, I miss you with all my heart." And I said this silently in my mind. And I said it with deep, deep emotion. I said, "I love you with all my heart. You were like a real father to me and my brother." And I said, "I'll never forget you." And I said, "I wish I could have you back again." And I started to drift away. My eyes were closed. It was a dark room. Suddenly, the room lights up with a brilliant light, like overwhelmingly powerful. So that, and simultaneously, I hear the sound of like something like this. The sound of chimes a key. I can have to finish the two. I was terrified. I know there was something happening, and I couldn't understand what, but I know it was supernatural. So I opened my eyes, and when I opened up my eyes, it was like another dimension, like another universe opened up, and a piece of paper was floating in the air. It was absolutely unreal and indescribable. And when I saw that piece of paper floating in the air, and that brilliant light all surrounding me and just consuming the room, I said, "I know now I'm not dreaming. This is not a dream." And along with the sound that I heard, and I put the cover over my head. I'm terrified. I'm absolutely, my heart is like ready to jump out of my body. And then the light goes out, whatever that light, whatever the source was. I jumped out of bed, screamed. My grandmother comes from the other room with her cane. She's 83 years old. She says, "What's wrong, Andrew? What's wrong?" I said, "Grandma, I had a bad dream. It's okay." Go back to the room. There's a piece of paper on the floor. And when I picked up the paper, it was scribbling, doodling. Showed it to my aunts and uncles, the brothers and sisters of my uncle. And they said that was Uncle John's handwriting. "Where did you get that from?" So that opened up my consciousness to the fact that, without any doubt, that this is just the beginning. When we leave this world, there is another universe, and it's forever. And we should be mindful of our thoughts and what we think and what we say, because it's all being monitored. And I cannot explain how that can be, but there are forces out there that monitor everything that we say and we do, and we should be very mindful of that. And I want to thank you for the opportunity to share my story.
Thank you, Andy. We appreciate you calling in and being a part of the show with us on that. That is true. And is it a global consciousness? Is it some kind of great equalizer that listens to us and reflects back on it? Miriam, what are your thoughts on that type of topic?
I think the message that we get from that is that we are never alone, and that we are greatly, greatly loved. You know, loneliness is one of the scourges of modern society. We feel that we're alone. We feel that we're the first person to experience whatever pain that we're going through. And all we have to do is open up with emotion, with real longing, and let that love pour in. It's sometimes hard to accept love, you know, or hard to accept the notion that you are loved. Sometimes that's our biggest challenge. That's what Anita Morjani said in her article, in her tale, that we really
are love, and we have to love ourselves first. That is our biggest challenge.
Right, and I've always been a firm believer that loneliness is just a wicked trick that our heart plays on our mind. Let's go to a wild card line three, Jeremy in Jamestown, North Dakota. Welcome to the show.
Hello, Dave, Miriam. It was just about 11 years ago on December 8, 2003. I was driving my vehicle up an icy hill. A Ford pickup started sliding down the road at me. The Ford slid clear across my lane and hit my vehicle head-on in my shoulder at about 25 miles an hour. Mm. The airbag and the seatbelt in my vehicle did not work at all. Immediately, I was in a coma for 2.5 months. When I woke up from the coma, they told me I broke both femurs, shattered both kneecaps, broke a foot, almost got my left pinky cut off, and injured my little brain. I have one purpose left in life, and that's to advise all the world that there's still more.
That's a beautiful message, Jeremy, and I'm glad that you're still with us and able to share that on the show this evening. Wildcard Line 4, Charlie in Oklahoma City, you're on the air with us.
How you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for calling in this evening. What did you want to talk with Miriam about?
Well, as an autistic savant, I pretty much take what Miriam is saying for granted. That is to say, I believe that. I live that. My problem is very few other people do. The prophet Isaiah said, "A man is as he thinks." And that's the way I think. But like I say, very few people do. They are in denial. And so we live in a society, in a culture, that doesn't readily accept the spiritual value of what she's saying, among other soothsayers, if you would. But, you know, it's very enlightening to hear other people describe their experiences, even like you were saying about polishing rocks. You know, isn't it interesting how they reflect and refract light? I believe the periodic table is really just an extension or a variation, if you will, of the electromagnetic spectrum. And when you talk about things like dark matter, you're really talking about matter that is not characteristic of light. And so when you talk about polishing these rocks, well, hey, they tend to reflect that light. They tend to refract that light. And you know, I think that's what we are. We're a bunch of rocks that need polishing.
I couldn't agree more with you, Charlie. Thank you for listening this evening and giving us a call. Miriam, it's been such a pleasure having you with us. And What Wags the World, Tales of Conscious Awakening, the book is out and available right now. Do you have a follow-up coming out anytime soon we should be watching for?
Not too soon, but I do have a magazine that collects a lot of the tales and reviews. It's New Consciousness Review at ncreview.com.
Miriam, thank you very much. Have very happy holidays with your family. We're going to take a break. When we come back, we'll take your calls. Open lines continue on Coast to Coast AM.